fruitive activities may not be so clear in people's minds, people in general's minds. What do you mean, fruitive activities? Does anybody have some clear understanding they can articulate what it may mean, fruitive work?
It's a concept. You want to get something.
You want to get something, yeah. Okay, so it's you want to get something. Okay, well, what is that generally termed? No, something like karma, isn't it? I mean, people understand karma a little bit more than maybe this term, fruitive work. But as Divyananda Prabhu says, yes, it's wanting to get something for one's activities. And as Prabhupada makes the point in the purport, most people in the world are engaged in this kind of activity where they think that that's the purpose of acting, is to get something. They're fruitive workers. And everything becomes calculated in that regard, that what I do, I get something in return. Basically, it's the law of karma acting. So fruitive activities is highlighted in this verse quite a bit. Actually, the verse really gives fruitive activities a chance, because generally, fruitive activities, this idea of getting something for what you want to do, is condemned throughout the Vedic scriptures as symptomatic of ignorance. And so here in this verse, fruitive activities is giving a little bit of a reprieve. It's okay if it's used to serve Krishna. Fruitive activity or karma yoga is okay if it's meant to serve Krishna, but if it's not, it's completely useless. And so this morning, what I thought that I would do is try to take a look at naked fruitive activity, fruitive work. Get the naked truth about what it actually is. And we find descriptions of this by our acharyas and in the scriptures such as Srimad Bhagavatam. In the fifth canto, there's a chapter, Adverse Effects of Fruitive Activity. So let's take a look at the naked truth of fruitive work. And we're going to do that in a couple different ways. First of all, we're going to have a bhajan. Bhajan by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, where he reveals the true nature of fruitive activity. And then there's a story. You know, there are many ways in which we can connect with Srimad Bhagavatam and the philosophy contained therein. Yesterday, Nagaraj Prabhu was giving class, and he nicely connected a very academic or linguistic approach, highlighting Sanskrit language and interpretation of the Sanskrit text as a way. Well, we've got to get 6 feet here. So let's get 6 feet.
Okay.
So he,
6 feet.
Yeah, otherwise they're going to come and bust us. Okay, so as I said, there are many ways in which we can connect with Srimad Bhagavatam. Yesterday, Nagaraj Prabhu connected us through Sanskrit and a philosophical analysis of the verse. But he also used modern politics as a way to connect with the Bhagavatam, as Prabhupada himself did in the purport, talking about the war between India and China, and how that was symptomatic of Kali Yuga. So we can connect in all different ways to the truth of Srimad Bhagavatam. So this morning we're going to try to do that through connecting through a bhajan by Bhaktivinoda Thakur and through a story that both reveal the truth of the fruitive work and this material world. Is it possible to get the bhajan anani kama filet? Anadi kama. Can you put it up there? Shama Darshan is going to sing this for us. Give him a chance to get it up there. You need the words, or do you know it? Okay. Yeah, please, sorry.
Samaye bandhu Krishna, Kripa Sindhu, Kripa Kori, Tolo More Bhale. Patita kim kore dori pada padma dhuli kori deha bhakati vinode ashray patita kim kore dori pada padma dhuli kori deha bhakati vinode ashray amitava nitya das bhuliya maya rapash badahaye achidaya
again, the bhajan is meant to reveal the naked truth of fruitive activities and activities in this world. So I'll read the translation and try to do so with feelings, because bhajan is one way that our acharyas, and particularly Srila Prabhupada, who love to sing bhajans, would give us the emotions, the appropriate emotions for devotional service. And so this bhajan has many such emotions concerning fruitive work. So I'll try to read it in such a way that that's conveyed. The Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, as a result of my selfish activities, which are without beginning, I have fallen into the ocean of material existence, and I see no means of deliverance from this great ocean of nescience. Day and night, my heart burns from the vicious poison of these worldly activities, and due to this, my mind never finds any real happiness. Bound by hundreds and hundreds of desires, like nooses around my neck, they constantly trouble me. In this ocean of nescience play the waves of ever-increasing materialistic tendency. There are also many thieves and rogues, of whom six are prominent. Lust, anger, envy, greed, illusion, and madness. They are causing me great fear, and this way my life is coming to an end. The two highway robbers named intellectual knowledge and fruitive activity have cheated me and misled me, and finally they have thrown me into the ocean of misery. At such a time as this, dear Krishna, you are my only friend. You are an ocean of mercy. Please be kind and by your strength uplift me from this condition of suffering. Grasping hold of this fallen servant and fixing him as a particle of dust on your lotus feet, kindly give shelter to Bhaktivinoda. O merciful Lord, I am actually your eternal servant, but having forgotten this, I have become bound up in the snare of Maya. Very graphic description of the difficulty that we can easily fall into in this material world when we forget eternal service to Krishna. So fruitive activities are condemned in this bhajan, but as I say, the purport and verse today give a little glimpse that at least if you utilize your situation in life and your tendency for fruitive work, if you utilize it for the service of the Lord, and all of us have so many talents or abilities that have come to us in a chain of fruitive work, now in this human form of life, if we can use it, use those propensities, those talents, those gifts to serve Krishna, then we have some hope. Otherwise, the ocean of nescience and the misery that Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes will come upon us. So that's a way to approach the Bhagavatam through bhajan, heartfelt singing of the glories of the Lord. Now I want to turn to another way in which we can relate to the Srimad Bhagavatam and the same naked truth of fruitive activities, fruitive work, in the form of a story. Some of you may know this story, it's not a new story, but I think it's interesting and illustrative of the point we're trying to make today. So I'll read it and then there are parts when we can reflect on it together, the meaning of the story. Once upon a time, a man was in the forest. He heard the sound of a tiger, so he started running. While running, he fell into a blind well in the forest covered by bushes and creepers. While falling down into the well, he got stuck on the root of a tree that was growing on the wall of the well. Have you heard this story before?
Yeah. No, but
we'll comment later.
I should not think that I heard this video, then I can't cross.
Okay. Good point. So he fell into the well, and on the way down, he got stuck on a branch of a tree that was growing out of the side of the well. So he was thinking, at least the tiger cannot come down here and get me. Then he saw that the bottom of the well was dry and that there were many snakes living there. They raised their hoods, hissing, and they were ready to bite him. Now he was really in a predicament, hanging from two branches halfway down a well. At the bottom, there were so many poisonous snakes waiting to bite him, and at the top, there was a ferocious tiger just waiting to eat him. At that time, he was suffering in great anxiety. Then he saw two rats. On one side of the root he was holding was a black rat eating away the root. And on the other side was a white rat doing the same. Now, it was only a question of time. Either he could climb out and be eaten away by the tiger, or he would have to go down and be bitten by snakes. He could not stay there. Sooner or later, the rats will finish the whole thing, and he will not even have the root to hang on. In this condition, he did not know what to do. But still, he was enjoying nicely thinking, at least I'm safe for a few hours. At that time, when he was in this very precarious situation, he noticed a honeycomb on the branch of the tree. Because the tree was shaking, some honey was dripping, and it just happened to be dropping very close to his face. Taking this golden opportunity, he stuck out his tongue, and a drop of honey came on the tip of the tongue, of his tongue. He took that honey into his mouth and began to relish the flavor, thinking, how sweet, how sweet. And thus he felt some happiness. Even in that miserable situation, he was saying, oh, misery is very nice. This honey is good. In the meantime, his friend came and saw the man had gone down. He brought a piece of rope and dropped it in and shouted, hold on the rope and come out. But this person said, no, no, I don't want the rope. I want honey. You please push the branch of the tree so that I can get more honey from the tree, from the beehive. In this story, there is a deep philosophical understanding. So we'll go over 9 points here of who is represented in this story. 1, the man is the spirit soul embedded in the material body. 2, the tiger, fate chasing him towards death, chasing all of us toward death, tiger. 3, the snakes, fearful death waiting with poisonous fangs. 4, the honey, sense gratification in material life with family, friends, and relatives. 5, the rats, this is the waxing and waning of the sun daily, kala, time. 6, the bees, so-called family, relatives, and friends. 7, the creeper, prana, the life air. 8, the blind well, samsara kupa, the wheel of repeated birth and death. 9, the friend. Who's the friend? Can anyone say?
Guru.
Guru's the way one gets Krishna. So Krishna, yes, coming as the guru, coming to save us. So there is a moral to this story. But maybe some of you have some thoughts on it before we read what's on the paper here. What do you think the lessons are we can learn from this look at, this naked look at material nature? Anybody? Nobody? No one got anything out of this reading?
Don't go walking in the jungle.
All right. Don't go. Why start down the path? Very good. Why start at all? It's just trouble ahead. So anything else you find going on?
Once I get out, never ever.
Okay, yeah. Learn your lesson once you get out. That's actually one of the reasons why we are put into difficulty. Particularly, everyone in this material world is like a prison house, right? It's meant to reform. So everyone gets that benefit, but especially the devotees. Sometimes we wonder, why are devotees put in difficulty and danger in life and so many things? Well, to learn something, because most people don't even connect with trying to learn something. So any other morals to the story? Yes.
Listen to intelligence.
Listen to your intelligence, the guru. That's a facility that's been given to us, so we should listen, not just neglect it. Very good. Anything else? Okay. Moral of the story. This is the example of conditioned soul in this world. They are in a very dangerous situation. The situation is dangerous right now. It's a dangerous situation. Virus or no virus is still a dangerous situation. The virus is just another dangerous situation in an already dangerous situation of the living entity in this material world. So the moral goes on here. We are all seized by eternal time in this well. Attracted by material enjoyments, we want to continue enjoying and remain inside the well, even though there are so many problems. How many of us, I know many times I've thought myself, why struggle so hard to get out? You know, I've been struggling so hard to get out. Give me a break. And that break is usually indulgence in material life, materialistic activities. But we should know that it's just like trying to taste the honey when one's in such a precarious situation as this man was in the well, ready to face a fearful death or to be devoured by a tiger. And most, the most serious thing, rejecting the advice of one's guru. So it goes on here. But time seizes us. Time and tide waits for no man. That little phrase reminds me so much of how Srila Prabhupada would take these English phrases. Discretion is a better part of valor is one he used. Time and tide wait for no man. Does anybody recall any others that Prabhupada uses? There are many such statements like that. Even after hearing the importance of bhakti to the Supreme Lord, we falsely think, let me enjoy now and later take to bhakti tomorrow. We are given the rope of mercy and knowledge from our best friend, Guru, but we refuse to take it and decide to stay in this material world. But who knows what tomorrow has in store for us? And there's a verse that says, tomorrow's business should be done today, and the afternoon's business in the forenoon. For whether a person had done it or not, death will not wait. Prabhupada tells a story of the man he personally saw in Allahabad. One very wealthy man was dying, and he was begging the doctor, just give me five more years, so I can complete my plans. When Prabhupada points out the folly, material nature doesn't wait for us to complete our plans. It takes us according to its terms, not ours. That's one thing we need to learn. We were talking about fruitive activities in the beginning. That's fruitive activities, the real evil thing about them is that they get us into this mentality of thinking that I'm the Lord, I can do, I'm the controller. And that's ultimately going to get us in trouble at some point along the line when we realize we're not. So Srimad Bhagavatam, verse 424-66, Lord Shiva prays to Krishna as follows. My dear Lord, All living entities within this material world are mad after planning for things. They are always busy with the desire to do this or that. This is due to uncontrollable greed. The greed for material enjoyment is always existing in the living entity. But your lordship is always alert, and in due course of time you strike him, just as a snake seizes a mouse and very easily swallows him. Belvamangala Thakur offers a prayer. This is the benefit of having so many acharyas in our disciplic line. We get the benefit of their experience over time immemorial. So Belvamangala Thakur, we all know Belvamangala Thakur. He had the rendezvous with the prostitute, and he went through so much trouble to cross a turbulent river, to scale a wall with a rope, but it was actually a snake, just to get to see his paramour, Chintamani. Belvamangala Thakur. And so he has some realization, and he's sharing that with us. Due to my unlimited sins, I have fallen into a dark well of material world, blinded by illusion and burning out of material anchors. I raise my hands unto you. Please save me, my dear Lord Vishnu, who is also known as Govinda, Damodar, and Madhava. The moment that we have a desire to get out of the well and raise our hands and call out to the Lord's names, Govinda, Damodar, Madhava, he mercifully extends his loving hands and takes us back home, back to Godhead. So it's not desolate. We have an opportunity. We're describing the adverse effects of fruitive work, but if we just add a little bit of bhakti, then Krishna responds in a way that's not fruitive. We said fruitive is like karma. Karma means tit for tat. What you give, you get. Equal. But the mercy of the Lord is beyond what we give. Again, Prabhupada explained, you take one step towards Krishna, he takes 10 steps towards you. Actually, I heard yesterday also, somebody was describing Krishna as a linguist. One of Krishna's qualities is a linguist, or he's fluent, one of those. And they were describing that Krishna can speak any language. And think about it, that we think, oh, that's so amazing, a Krishna, he can speak any language. But this story was pointing out, the real wonderful thing about that is that Krishna doesn't demand that you speak my language. He's willing to speak your language to save you. He's willing to speak your language to save you. He's so, so kind. Okay, Pingala, we know her prostitute from the 11th canto. Pingala has completely understood that Krishna alone is the original supreme controller, who can give living entities like us who are fallen into a blind well. Other than him, no one else will be able to get us out of the blind well. So in verse 11:8:41, Pingala says, the intelligence of the living entity is stolen away by activities of sense gratification, and thus he falls into the dark well of material existence. Within that well, he is then seized by the deadly serpent of time. Who else but the Supreme Personality of Godhead could save the poor living entity from such a hopeless condition? Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Does anyone have any reflections, comments, or questions you'd like to share? Prabhu Govinda.
I don't know if it is the same story, but Chaban Muni Prabhu, who was a sannyasi before, you know, the way I say it sometimes, maybe you may not understand. Chaya Bana, or in Bengali we call Chaban Muni. Mm. In Wilson, he used to live, he passed away. He just passed away. One day I went there, I remember he mentioned us a story of Prabhupada in Nairobi morning walk. And he didn't go to back to temple, he sat under a tree and he gave the class. And he gave the class, and in the class he says, so the conditioned souls coming to this material world is like a fall into a ditch. It's similar to this story. And then he says, and Guru comes with the rope and he throws the rope and he's asking the disciple, hold onto it tightly. But sometimes some disciple say, Gurudev, you please lift it up. I can't hold it. It's like too much for me. So anyway, he breaks down in the conversation. He says, Prabhupada gave that example. No, Prabhupada asked a quiz question that Guru has come to pick up the disciple, to take the disciple back home, back to Godhead. So that's Guru's duty. What is the duty of disciple? So some of them say four regulative principle, follow chan 60 nouns and others. But he remembers that Prabhupada, actually nobody could give exactly the answer. Then Prabhupada says, disciple also has to have the same desire to go back home, back to God. The Guru has come to take me back home, I want to go back home. He says, until you are aligned with Guru's desire, you will not be able to reach.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Good instruction. Yes,
this is a verse from the first canto about fruit activity. Thus, when all a man's activities are dedicated to the service of the Lord, those very activities which caused his perpetual bondage become the destroyer of the tree of work. And Prabhupada says here in the purport, fruit of work, which has perpetually engaged the living being, is compared to the banyan tree in the Gita, where it is certainly very deeply rooted. And as long as the propensity to enjoy the fruit of one's work is there, one has to continue the transmigration of the soul from one body and one place to another according to the nature of that work. So Prabhupada's saying how important it is to take your work, take your activity, and dedicate it to Krishna, and it turns it completely around. Mm. Destroyer of the tree of work.
Wow, thank you for that. It's very nice. Anything else you want to ask?
There was a question raised that it is not possible. The definition of pure bhakti is that annavilashita shunyam. Jnana karma adi anabhritam. So it's a devoid of jnana and karma and yoga, etc. So I remember the commentary of karma is given that so long I have a desire to enjoy the result of my activity separately from Krishna, it is karma, period. Whatever it is, it's not a last for me, anything that I want to enjoy separately from Krishna, it's karma, according to the vision of the Gotitava definition. So, but then question raised that every conditioned soul has to do karma because that's how they are born with contamination. But then question, when they come to Krishna consciousness, when they stop that, is it possible to stop immediately? Yes, but they will not do it. They want to maintain their separate existence some sort. And then the question came, so when will they completely stop? So then verse from 11th chapter, 11th canto, I don't remember the number, but I remember the verse. Tavat karmani kurvita na niraveddha javata matkata sravanado va sraddha javanna jayate. So long they do not have these two things. And Prabhupada quote this verse many times. Krishna is speaking to Uddhava, that the satiation from the sense enjoyment and taste for Harikatha, if these two things did not arise in the heart, it is Krishna's advice not to give up karma.
Well, when we come to devotional service, we come as just fresh out of the pool of fruitive activity, and we still have strong propensity to use our karma in the service of Krishna. Because that's an important step, even to use my karma in the service of Krishna, to give the results to Krishna, as Divyanga read that nice verse. But the Guru also gives us pure transcendental lifeline that we take up right away also, chanting Hare Krishna, other activities that are not as a result of our fast fruitive work. We also get those, and those in the practice of devotion, those service throughout our life is supposed to be more and more replacement of the fruitive results being offered to Krishna with pure service to the Guru. And so the tree is destroyed, as Divyanga Prabhu read, and it's replaced with something, because we're actors, we have to act. And so it's replaced with 100%, 24 hours a day, devotional service. And we find the examples of devotees who are completely disconnected with their previous lives and totally absorbed in the service of Krishna. So that's the mercy of the Guru and the Vaishnavas, that we're all made.
So in the start of the class you were mentioning, you know, about the food of activities and how this verse kind of gives us a little break, or I forget how you put it. So with that, it seems like, okay, Krishna is in this verse, we're given a concession. But then isn't that our goal? I mean, is that our goal, that whatever we have, whatever talents, whatever possessions, whatever we have, we offer that to Krishna, that bhakti. But then it sounded as if it's a concession. And we feel like concession is not necessarily, could be one's goal.
Well, the verse describes, as I said, the naked truth of fruitive activities. It's giving a graphic description. It says, knowledge of self-realization, even though free from all material affinity, does not look well. So let's look at fruitive activities. And fruitive activities, the naked truth is what we've tried to describe, doesn't look well. But when it's connected with Krishna, then it looks well. It's gold-plated. Gold and gold-plated, there's no difference, Prabhupada says. So it's gold-plated. So otherwise, fruitive activities have no value. But when they're connected with Krishna, then, oh, it looks well. That's a concession, fruitive activities given in this verse. Okay, let's end there. Grantara Srimad Bhagavatam. Please.